Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Charlene Aiken, bar number 35396, and I represent the appellant, Matt Green. There are three issues I'd like to discuss with you today, if time permits. One is that the trial court abuses discretion in its division of marital property. Second is that the trial court abuses discretion in its award of maintenance. Third is that it abuses discretion in the attorney's fees award. And if time permits, on the contempt issue. The first is that the trial court abused its discretion in its division of marital property, pursuant to 1410.113. And when we look at that statute and case law, the marital division property must be just and equitable, but not necessarily equal. And the factors for determining the division is the value of the estate to be divided, financial condition of the parties, the ability of each spouse to earn money, how the property was acquired, and age and status of the parties. And also a highly relevant factor, particularly in this case, is the extent to which that division will promote the objective of providing for each party's financial needs without maintenance. Now let's look at the division of real estate. There was a marital property home with about $78,695 in equity, which should have been divided equitably, or $39,347 given to each party. What the trial court did on page 4 of the order, in the record, page 530, is said that the marital residence and the $78,695 equity are awarded to respondent husband. And then later on says to offset that equity in the marital residence awarded to husband, the $78,695 of the balance in the 401k is also awarded to petitioner. So what the trial court did here was created marital property that didn't exist. It created an additional $78,695 versus dividing that amount. So the total of that was $157,390. Essentially, wife was then awarded 100% of the equity in the marital home. Now let's look at the division of marital debts. Husband was allocated $87,769 in marital debts. That included a $12,000 attorney's lien, $12,000 in family loans. Wife was assigned $60,000, almost $61,000 in marital debts. That included $45,000 that she borrowed from the family for attorney's fees. However, prior to permanent orders, there was an agreement that was made into an order in temporary orders. And within that party's agreement, they agreed that there was significant debts of the marriage and that they would take the marital assets. Those marital assets would be liquidated to pay every single credit card debt. And that was specifically put into an agreement, made right into the record at temporary orders and made into an order of the court.
But wasn't that just for purposes of temporary orders? Doesn't all that go away once you have a trial and permanent orders?
Well, I think that in this case, because the parties made a separate agreement that was different from the trial court assessing orders, that agreement should have been considered when the court was making a division of marital property at permanent orders, because this was the party's agreement, which was separate and distinct from temporary orders. It was just so happened that that was encompassed into temporary orders.
Can we go back to the award of the equity in the marital home?
Sure.
I'm having a difficult time understanding your argument.
Sure.
It was my understanding that the court awarded the equity in the marital home to your client, the husband.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
And then the court awarded an equal amount from the 401k to the wife, correct?
To be taken from the 401k, yes.
So I'm having a hard time understanding why that's not equal. I mean, we have one asset that has an equity of $78,000 over here, so I give that to the husband, and another asset over here, and I give $78,000 out of that asset to the wife, so that those are equal, and then divide the remaining asset in the 401k equally between the parties. Why is that not equal?
Because what the court did here is the court took $78,000, and awarded that to the respondent. Then, instead of...
Could you talk in husband-wife?
Sure.
Respondent, petitioner, so it's kind of hard.
Okay, so...
Thank you.
You're welcome. So the trial court took the $78,695, awarded that to the respondent, and then took that entire $78,695 away from the husband, because that was not given in any form of cash or, you know, included in his portion of the 401k, and then included that in half of the division of the 401k. So that $78,000 was added on top of her half of the division of the 401k asset.
I thought the record showed that the court subtracted the $78,000 out of the 401k first, and then took the remainder and split that in half.
If we look at the trial court record, it says that the value of the 401k was $197,347. Then there was an outstanding loan of $23,258. And then to offset the equity in the Merrill residence, awarded to respondent $78,000 of the balance in the 401k is awarded to wife. So this leaves a balance of $118,653, which is to be divided equally between the parties.
Right.
So the court did not account for that $78,695 in husband's division of the marital property. In other words, it created an additional asset that was not there. It should have been.
I don't get this. If we take the equity in the house and the total equity in the 401k, add them together and divide by two, we get exactly what the court did here.
Well, if we take, there was only $78,695 to be split. So the court didn't split the $78,695. The court added an additional $78,695 to the property that wasn't there.
No, he took $78,000 of the equity in the 401k that was there. Your client testified there was $200,000 in the 401k.
The record shows 197. Right.
So the court taking $78,000 out of that isn't creating $78,000.
But the court taking that out then is not accounting for husband's share of that marital portion of the equity in the home.
Well, if that were a problem, then there would be a problem on the other side with the equity in the house, because the wife didn't get any equity in the house. The court gave it all to the husband. So you're saying the court gave no equity in the house to the wife. According to your argument, that's the problem. It has to do these little separate chopping up each individual asset. Is that what you're saying?
The way that we're reading the order is that the equity in the marital home was given entirely to wife, and that there was a creating of the marital equity of the $78,695 in the marital home.
It's totally contrary to what the trial court said it did. It gave the entire equity to the husband.
Right, and then it said to offset the equity in the marital home that the $78,000 is then awarded to petitioner.
Isn't that what trial courts do all the time when they're dividing up property? They figure out, I'll take a little bit here, and I'll take a little bit there, and I'll come up with an overall plan that is equitable, but not necessarily equal. I mean, isn't that what trial courts are not just authorized to do, but essentially ordered to do by the statute?
That is correct, but here the court did not equitably divide any of the $78,695. It gave it entirely to wife.
Let me ask you this. Let's say we had two houses,
mm-hmm.
two marital houses,
mm-hmm.
and one of them was worth $197,000, but it had $78,000 equity in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another one over here that has $78,000 equity in it. And the court says, I'm going to award the $78,000 in this house A to husband, and I'm going to award the $78,000 equity in house B to wife. Isn't that what the court did here? Only house B was a 401k.
I disagree, because of the fact that the 401k was a marital asset that the 197 should have been divided equitably or in half. So then each party should have gotten around $100,000.
So then the 401k should have been divided in half.
Correct.
But bottom line is, we get to the exact same number either way. each party gets the exact same amount of money.
I would disagree. I would think that the way that the order is written and the way that the QDRO was prepared is that the $78,000 came off the top or got added to wife's portion of the 401k.
What legal authority do you have for the proposition that each marital asset must be treated in isolation and divided relatively equally?
There is no authority. In the state of Colorado, it must be divided equitably.
But I'm talking about each individual marital asset. What precludes a court from saying one party gets all of a particular asset and the other party gets all of another asset? You seem to be arguing that the court has to look at each asset separately and chop them in half or equitably, disregarding any other assets.
No, I think that the trial court must consider the totality of the circumstances and must consider the marital estate in a whole and make sure that all the assets and the debts considered in the totality of the circumstances is divided equally. Not necessarily that each asset and each debt is divided halfway down the middle. And I think if you look further into the debts and the marital assets, that they were not divided equitably. If we move on, that there was an award of $5,242 that was reserved in husband's prior trust account that was to be used to pay the marital debts, and that was allocated to wife as a cash payment. Husband was also given all of the IRS tax levy for the past due taxes. So there was an abuse of discretion in the division of marital property. If we look at the maintenance issue, maintenance and property division must be considered together to achieve a just result in dissolution proceedings. And that if the property order does not stand, maintenance should also be set aside. And here, there was evidence that husband's sworn financial statement, his income, his voluntary deductions, and that the errors between his pay stub and his sworn financial statement showed about $1,500. And this also assumed that he would not have to be paying $1,400 in minimum credit card payments. And the award of maintenance awarded was 65% of husband's net income. I think you also have to look at the vocational reports and wife's earning capacity. And the Pickett report said that she should be earning $40,000 annually based on the education and experience, where her rebuttal expert said she should be earning about the same, but after 18 years of practice, 9 years after the divorce and 9 years within the divorce. And the allocation that Ruth had wasn't consistent with the maintenance award. For example, after year five, her earning capacity would double, but the maintenance award was only reduced by a quarter. And after 8 years, according to her report, her income would triple, and the maintenance award would only be decreased by a quarter.
Counsel, what do you do with the fact that on the maintenance issue, the trial court made a specific credibility determination and said, quite frankly, it didn't believe husband? I mean, we're bound by that, aren't we, as an appellate court?
You are bound by the findings of fact, but I think you have to look at the joint expert Pickett, and you have to look at the expert, the rebuttal expert Ruth, and weigh those reports. And I think
that's where I want to stop right there. Why is it our job to weigh those? That's the trial court's job. The trial court started its analysis by saying, I've got conflicting evidence. I agree that I've got conflicting evidence. I go with this one. I mean, is there some legal rule that the trial court violated as opposed from just saying, this is how I see the evidence? And if that's the case, what can we as an appellate court do about that?
Well, I think you also have to look at the circumstances around the rebuttal expert. She was It was led to believe that she would be testifying, and then the day of trial, she ironically doesn't show up. There was no opportunity to cross-examine her rebuttal report to even put that question in the trial court's mind that maybe this report was not reliable, and that maybe Pickett's report was more of the circumstances. I see that I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Janet Seidel. My registration number is 20388, and I represent the appellee, Ms. Lisa Green, now known as Lisa Compton.
Ms. Seidel, before you get started,
yes, sir.
I want to make sure I get a question asked here, because we didn't get to talk about the contempt citation, and I don't know if you were going to argue that or not, but I have a question about it.
Yes, sir.
In the record, there's a stipulation between the parties that was subsequent to the temporary orders that's actually entitled Order Ray Family Support, Payment of Marital Credit Card Debt, Tax Preparation, Asset Liquidation, in which this respondent renting a storage unit was discussed.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. As far as I can find in the record, that order or that stipulation was only signed by Dennis J. Tharp, attorney for respondent, and I don't see that it was ever adopted as an order. Do you have any information about anything else in the record regarding that document as to whether or not it was ultimately signed by all parties as a stipulation and adopted by the court as an order?
Your Honor, it was adopted by the court as an order. One of the issues in this case, this almost two-year-long case, was that we had difficulty obtaining the respondent's signature, or the husband's signature, on some of the stipulations, which caused the court to have to execute some of the stipulations for the husband, just because they'd been read into the record, but then when they were presented to him to be signed, he didn't sign them. He refused to sign them.
So this, what's captioned as an order says, respectfully submitted this, and it says 14th day, that's X'd out, 23rd day of October 2011, nunc pro tunc, 10-13-11, and signed by Mr. Thorpe, and talks about storage unit rented by respondent. Respondent agrees to take the business records for Acura LLC to the storage unit. Petition over inventory of the storage unit. That was adopted as an order, you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you know if that order that was adopted is in the record?
It certainly should be, Your Honor.
Okay.
I believe it is.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Your Honors, today there are four issues before the court that are being appealed by the husband. And the first issue that we spent a lot of time on this morning was the division of marital assets, the division of marital property. In our response brief, or our answer brief, the standard of review that we've set forth is that an appellate court may not set aside the determination of the trial court absent declared abuse of discretion. And the trial court abuses its discretion when its findings are so manifestly against the weight of the evidence as to compel a contrary result. In this case, the property division, Your Honor, is almost equal. Definitely equitable, but almost equal. In this case, we did have the house and the house equity that was just discussed. The $78,695. Husband gets $78,695. Wife gets $78,695. Then the remainder of the 401k was divided equally. Equal division of marital assets. Wife was also awarded the 5,000 $424 from the husband's former attorney's trust account. That $5,424 was remaining after the husband liquidated two Wells Fargo accounts. He paid some of the marital credit card debt, and he paid some family support. Remaining at the time of permanent orders was this $5,424. This was awarded to wife. This is a 16-year marriage. Wife did not work full-time during the 16-year marriage. She was out of the full-time job market for that time. So an extra $5,424 is not inequitable at all. Additionally, wife was also awarded an account called the UDS account, which is the account that husband's employer deposits the vested stock options. Once they're vested, they went into the UDS account, and there was approximately $18,000 in that account. Wife was also awarded that account. So wife was awarded approximately $24,000 more than husband after a 16-year marriage where she didn't work and he was a full-time breadwinner. She took care of the house, the children, everything, so that husband could pursue his career. She even moved to Colorado so that husband could have a better job and a very high-paying job.
Counsel, let me ask you the same question I asked opposing counsel. I want to make sure I'm not missing something from a mathematical perspective.
Yes.
Let's just look at the two primary assets, the house and the 401k.
Yes.
Hypothetically speaking, if the court had split the $78,000 in equity in the house between husband and wife, and then split the equity in the 401k equally between husband and wife, would we get to the exact same place that the court did, at least with respect to those two assets?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor, and our answer brief cites authority where the trial court has broad discretion as to how property is divided. There is no set formula.
And it makes sense to divide equity in the house and give that to one party so that you don't have two parties on title, especially two parties who are no longer married.
Yes, Your Honor, and husband requested the house, and it was awarded to him. He had proposed to the court that wife get half the equity in the house, and that half of the equity would be paid from the 401k. But again, when we divide the 401k, we get to the same number. Counsel also was talking to the court about the tax levy that husband must pay. It was ordered that he pay the tax levy, but if your honors would look at the court file, pages 591 to 592, husband requested and actually said that if the tax bill revolves around my income and my payment of taxes against that income, I believe I am 100% responsible. The tax bill, as far as we know from husband's testimony, was for his income. Wife was not working full-time. Husband was making $161,400 that year. He testified that any refund for any of the years they had not filed taxes for in the past should be divided 50-50, but he stated that he should be responsible for all of the taxes, and the taxes owing on the years of tax returns that husband had not yet filed were ordered that husband pay those taxes. Husband had not, filed any tax returns for the years 2008, 9, 10, and 11 as of permanent orders. So we were working in a situation where we knew what his income was, but we didn't know exactly what the taxes would be. And that's when husband said, I'm 100% responsible for that. But any refunds, if there are any refunds for these years, which are 2005 to 2011, should be equally divided, and that was the order of the court. Your Honor, we submit that the property division was not only close to equal, it was very equitable. No matter how you divide the property, wife did receive $24,000 extra after 16 years of marriage, but we believe that is equitable based upon the testimony of the parties and the weight of the evidence. We also believe that the maintenance issue, which is also in the sound discretion of the court, there is no abuse of discretion there. When you look at the parties' economic circumstances, when you look at the husband's income of $161,400 for the year 2011 versus wife's income of zero, that is approximately $13,450 per month. The maintenance awarded after all the testimony, looking at all of the financial exhibits, this was a very detailed permanent orders regarding money. Finally, the wife was ordered, did receive $4,000 per month in maintenance for 4 years and $3,000 per month in maintenance for the next 4 years. And the trial court, there were no vocational experts at the permanent orders, this is true. Judge Jose Marquez took the two vocational reports by the two vocational experts, and he took judicial notice of these reports, and he gave them the weight that he thought was appropriate after listening to all the economic circumstances of the parties. And again, with maintenance, the provision of maintenance is within the sound discretion of the court after listening to all the testimony and reviewing all the exhibits. Judge Marquez's order was very, very detailed. He went through the statutory requirements. He went through every step required and found that wife could not support herself without this maintenance. And he did find that based upon the income numbers from permanent orders, that husband can support himself, even paying this $4,000 a month. And there is extensive testimony that Your Honors have probably read in my answer brief, where we were able to find, based upon husband's one financial statement, we were able to find errors, mistakes, misrepresentations, omissions, where we found $4,300, I believe it was $4,318, just in those mistakes and errors that would clearly allow husband to pay the maintenance and not change his lifestyle at all. And this, it's a very detailed argument in the answer brief, and I do request that Your Honors look at that, because it shows the reasonableness of the maintenance order. When you look at all of husband's financial responsibilities, as well as his actual income, on his sworn financial statement was underreported by $2,842 a month, just on the first page. And then we were able to go through the deductions and find another almost $2,000 where husband had entered deductions twice, or there were deductions that didn't exist anymore. So we were able to find $4,318 just on errors without husband changing his lifestyle at all. We believe that the maintenance award is fair, reasonable, and there was no abuse of discretion. We are asking that all four issues today, Your Honor, be affirmed in its entirety. The contempt issues are clear. Judge Marquez found that husband was in punitive contempt to such a level that it was offensive to the dignity of the court on three separate issues. And that's why the jail time and the fine was also added into permanent orders. And lastly, Your Honor, we believe the award of the attorney fees, also at the trial court's discretion, is fair and reasonable based upon the economic circumstances and the financial conditions of the parties at the time. Each brief has a pretty detailed argument on the award of attorney fees. We did have 92 pages of statements, attorney fee statements, as exhibits, and those are filed with the court. They were at permanent orders, they were an account management certificate, they were not a surprise, and we believe that the attorney fees are fair and reasonable.
Did the trial court ever make any kind of finding as to the necessity of those attorney fees?
Yes, the trial court did, Your Honor. The trial court found that the attorney fees that there was an opportunity for the trial court to equalize the earning capacity of the parties, and the trial court found that the court has reviewed the attorney fees requested by petitioner, finds an inequity in the resources of the parties, and determines respondent has more access to resource than petitioner. Therefore, an award of attorney fees and costs to petitioner is proper. Having reviewed the totality of the circumstances of this dissolution, including the disproportionate incomes of the parties, the court orders respondent to pay 75% of petitioner's attorney fees and costs. This is in the court file, pages 598 to 599.
It doesn't answer my question. Did the court make any finding as to the necessity of that amount of attorney fees?
I believe the court did, Your Honor. I don't have the quote in front of me.
Okay. But thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your arguments.
I think she's got some rebuttal time left.
No.
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 I just have a rebuttal.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Thank you for your arguments. Your arguments will be helpful to us in reaching a decision in this case, and the matter will stand submitted to the court, and an opinion will issue in due course.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counselor, excuse me.